This week on Three Questions with Corey Kareem.
Do you notice a difference from a mindset perspective between a Black entrepreneur and, let's just say, a non-Black entrepreneur?
Yes. And, you know, the answer that I'm going to give you is going to actually shock you.
Really? I'm interested. Let's go.
So the only difference is...
Now, before we get started with this beautiful conversation, please help a brother out and click on that follow button on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Enjoy the conversation.
Welcome back, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Three Questions with Corey Kareem, the podcast where we sit down with some amazing people who are doing some amazing things. And that's right, you guessed it. We ask them three questions, sometimes four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. I know. But rather than just talk about my guests, their wins, and their successes, we tend to start the conversation around their failures, more specifically, the lessons that they learn from those individual experiences. So, with that being said, my guest today is a visionary entrepreneur, mindset coach, and host of the Attractive Mindset Podcast. He's known for having a unique balance between delving into cognitive psychology and transforming knowledge into business success. So needless to say, he's a force to be reckoned with. From the streets of Brooklyn, New York, to leadership in the Marine Corps, his journey has shaped his entrepreneurial spirit. His companies have soared to multi-six-figure incomes, collaborating with industry giants like the Hard Rock Stadium, Morgan Freeman, and DJ Khaled. His impact goes beyond the bottom line, as his mindset coaching has generated over $10 million in revenue for businesses. So, without further ado, Darian Rich Richardson, a.k.a. Mastermind Rich, a.k.a. Money Bag Rich. Welcome to the podcast, brother.
Thank you. I appreciate you, man. Appreciate everybody. Appreciate three questions, all of it, man.
So, man, I've been waiting all week for this episode. So a little backstory, Rich, and I'll let you expand upon your background and what you do, because I know I just gave you a bit of a lightweight intro. But for my listeners, for my audience, I met Rich Orlando, Florida. At a podcast conference, interestingly enough. And man, this brother was looking fly. He had the shades on, people gravitating around him. There's a crowd. I was like, man, I don't know who this brother is, but I know before I leave this conference this weekend, I got to make an introduction and reach my hand out. And here we are. So Rich, like I mentioned, I know I just gave you a very short, brief intro. So for my listeners, for my audience that are just now getting to know who you are and what you do, why don't you give them a brief synopsis about your background and how you help people?
Absolutely. So, you know, my official name would be Darian Richardson, but I was in the Marine Corps. So that last name, Rich, that's where that comes from. And, you know, when we focus on finances and mindset, that's where Money Bag comes from. And that's where Mastermind comes from. So Mastermind Rich, Money Bag Rich, I go by both of those names because both exist at the same time. And sometimes it requires me to split that personality for people to understand deeper, because mindset is all, you know, about different mindset things, but it's not all about money either. So, you know, we blend both of those together to get kind of that yin yang balance, that light dark, that harmony, that kind of cohesion. So, you know, to just explain a little bit more about me is I'm from Brooklyn, New York originally. Yep. And so pretty much, you know, I live in South Florida now, but I spent 5 years in California military, went on a couple deployments, came back, you know, and really started investing into business after that. Because before then I was homeless and I got kicked out at 16. You know, mom moved to Atlanta. I was kind of bad when I was young. So it's not like I can say I could blame her. You know, that's, you know, part of myself was resentful at first because, you know, I'm 16 years old, you know, I don't know any better. But at the time, you know, that's the beginnings of a young adult. And if we say to ourselves that we don't know any better, then how can we treat these other young kids out here as if they should know better when we do the same things in and out? So I had to take more accountability. I had to be more vulnerable with everything around me to just accept a different tone for my life, accept a different mindset. So I started getting into psychology because the Marine Corps paid for it. I went to school for it. I went to school for psychology and arts, and I dropped out before I got the actual degree because I started making more than my professors. So that's where Moneybag Rich came in, but Mastermind Rich. I started basing everything that I did around systems and building structure. And pretty much that's where how we got to where we are today.
Wow. There's so much to unpack there, and we're going to do that to the best of our abilities on this episode. So, Rich, let's get into this. You mentioned a lot in your story that I really want to focus on a few different pieces. So I'm going to start off a little bit different than what I had originally had thought in my mind. But you mentioned that you were a pretty bad kid in high school.
Yeah.
You know, when your mom moved to Atlanta, you ended up homeless. So when you say you were a pretty bad kid in high school around that age category, what are we talking about? Like, what were you into? Talk to me about Rich at that particular time period in your life. And then talk to us, to me, my audience, my listeners, how you made that change. Like, what did you do to kind of make that change?
So what Rich was like in high school, if I had to put that in one word, was rebellious. And I was that version of bad. You know, I wasn't bad in the sense that I disrespected older people or I disrespected my elders or I wasn't listening to just anybody or anything, but I did things on my time and I was forced to grow up very adult-like, even though I still lived with my mom at that time because she couldn't really afford that much for me. But if you know anything about New York, you know, that's the true source of, you know, joke culture and whatnot. So if I wanted the new Jordans and jeans and all of that type of stuff, I had to go outside and get it. You know, I paid for my first phone, which was a Nextel. I paid for my first, you know, fly kicks, you know, all of that stuff by just being able to hustle, being able to be outside. But being in that environment is where we, you know, truly had those what people would call OGs back then. And so since I was around them, I would see things that they would do. And as messed up as some people would say they are, they had a code, they had an ethic, you know, and they always protected theirs. And so I kind of developed that for me and my friends. And I went on fighting sprees to protect the people that I cared for as friendships or people in high school. And it led me to eventually getting expelled out of that high school because I got into fights too many times and my parents didn't understand it from that direction because they were super religious, Seventh-day Adventists. So I couldn't really do any much. And that was my rebellious phase because I always questioned things like, why? Why do I have to be this way? Why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? And I didn't mean it in a disrespectful manner, but I just also didn't agree with how things were going. And I felt like, you know, the turn the other cheek method wasn't for me. You know, I was going to fight back. If you come against me or mine, you know, that's what it was. And so that's what led me into my rebellious phase. That's what led me into eventually getting gang involved, not to the point of, you know, being a gang banger on the streets and everything like that. But I've posted before and after pictures of me when I was hanging around some of those people and everything. And it ended up, you know, me getting shot in my arm. You know, I got stabbed a couple times and it was a bad path to be on at first. And it took a friend reaching out to me that was in the Marine Corps. And he's like, yo, you might have gotten into a lot of fights, but you're actually smart. You did your work. I watched you pass the classes. You could easily have made honor roll if you wanted to. You just didn't want to. And so he said, it's not the greatest option, but it's something that can change your perspective on life. And he offered me to join the Marine Corps. And at that time, my mom had already kicked me out. She had little sisters with my stepfather. And so I got expelled out of school. This is 11th grade. I'm like, yo, I don't know what else to do. All right, cool, whatever. You know, she moves to Atlanta. I go finish 12th grade in Jamaica High School, Queens. And growing up there didn't make it that much better, you know, but it was a different environment where I didn't have those type of people around me. So I was able to focus on a lot more schoolwork and just a lot more hustle ethic. And, you know, I bounced around from friend house to friend house because I didn't have an official house to just be at myself. And that's when I landed with my boy Naeem, who still to today we're in contact. You know, I'm the godfather of his child. And, you know, he's like, yo, you can stay at my crib. I don't know where my mom went, but until she comes back, like, you can stay here. And pretty much that situation turned into another situation, which is a blessing in disguise, because his mom, you know, Sandra, bless Sandra, she's also still in my life till today. She had a mental breakdown because of some things that went on in their family. And that made her go to have to, you know, go on her self journey. And it sounds harsh, but she had to also figure her life out. And so the house that was there went into foreclosure, all type of stuff. And so the electricity went off, the hot water went off, everything went off. And I was back homeless again, pretty much. But now I had people around me. I had Naeem around me. I had Malik around me. And so we stayed in that house for about a year, year and a half with no hot water, no electricity, no nothing like that. And we got little jobs here and there to try and keep it up or try to keep the stuff on or turn it on when we could. And sometimes we would make it, but often not, we wouldn't. And so, again, that led me back turning to the streets. And that's when my friend, again, is like, yo, you need to join this. I'm telling you, like, you're going to either end up dead or in jail. That's the only path that you're on right now. And so I took it. And in me taking it, that's where my life changed for the better.
Wow. So would you say, would you go as far as saying that the Marine Corps changed your life?
I would go as far to say as mindset changed my life, because the first major decision, even before I joined the Marine Corps, was I had to change my mind to join the Marine Corps. I didn't know what the military was like that at the time. Of course, you see the movies and you hear the stuff and right. play the Call of Duties, but I had no idea what it actually meant to be a part of the military. And so that's where my first major mind shift went to open my mind first. And people have to understand that that's a version of yourself that you have to become even before you make the decision. Like, if you're trying to lose weight, if you're trying to stop a habit, if you're trying to quit smoking, if you're trying to do anything, the first thing that happens before the actual action is the decision.
Right. And so your friend brings up joining the Marines twice to you during your high school period. So what made you say yes the second time around when he brought it up to you?
Because I had been shot by that point, gang involved. I had been, you know, back on the streets. My brother had went to jail. Another friend's house just got shot up. And I'm like, man, I'm following the trend, you know, and he's the only person saying those kind of things to me at that point. Everybody else is like, you know, well, this is just everyday life. They're not thinking like there's another life out there. There's something else out there. So with right. nothing else being out there, you know, to them, it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna either do this or I'm gonna become a victim of this. And so, you know, me opening my mind to accepting that, you know, somebody's actually reaching their hand out to me was one of the first steps.
Got you. And what would you say that, what was the lesson you think you learned from that moment in your life, that period in your life? I'm assuming there's probably many, but if you have to pick one, what do you think is that lesson that you learned?
That lesson, if I had to pick one for that, would be ignorance. You know, ignorance is large. We don't know what we don't know. And, you know, we often judge a lot of other people based off of the things that they do in the moment. You know, a lot of people, if they were to look back at me at that time of my life, oh, he's just this kind of kid. This is the path he's going down. They don't, you know, they break the rules. They don't listen to anybody. But I didn't think I had a choice. You know, I didn't know that I had a choice. And so when a choice was actually presented to me, that's when my entire life changed. And I can only imagine, which is why I do what I do now, is, yeah, I might work with some corporate people here and there. I might work with some, you know, regular, you know, type families and here and all that stuff. But my actual target is the people that don't know that you can actually change your life in this type of way.
Right. I love that, man. And it kind of reminds me of a couple of different things. So one, I have one of my good friends. He's an author. He's actually coming out with his third book. And he'll often go to underprivileged schools or schools in underprivileged areas, hard hit areas. And he'll go in and kind of give a talk about what he does as an author. And he told me this one time that he went in and, you know, a young black kid went up to him. You know, these kids are high school. And the kid said to him, "I didn't even know being an author is something I could do." And that's wild to me. And this is not like 15 years ago. This is like last year.
Yep.
Right. And it's, I guess, because, you know, once you've been out of it so long, it seems crazy that someone could still think that they couldn't be something like that with all the information you have out there with the YouTubes and the Googles and all that stuff. But I mean, you bringing up that point just reminds me that, you know, regardless of what era or what time we're in, based on someone's living circumstance or situation, their thinking could be very limited. And as you were just putting it, ignorance is very big. It's very large, right? And the second thing you mentioned to me that kind of stood out is that choice. You made a choice and you helped people realize they have a choice. And I think sometimes when we're in the thick of it, we think that our choices, that we have no choice. They might be limited, but we think that we have no choice. And I remember I took this course, Rich, called Landmark. That's okay. What it is. I don't know if you're familiar with Landmark, but they do courses all over the world, big on mindset. And I took this 3-day course. It was over, like, I want to say, it was about 12 hours a day. So 36 hours in 3 days. And I remember it was about 100 people in my session. And there was this lady, and everyone was to kind of get up and share their story. And so this lady got up, beautiful lady, by the way. She had mentioned that, you know, she's struggling with intimacy in her new marriage. And what she mentioned was that in her previous marriage, her husband, you know, raped her. Right. And so that trauma from that past relationship, that past marriage has carried over into this new marriage. And I remember what the instructor said. And he said, "You know what? That's a very, very, very unfortunate thing that happened to you. And I'm sorry that it happened to you. But we can't change the past. And as bad as that was, we still have a choice. How are we going to use that experience to help us in our life moving forward?" And basically what he was saying was everyone has a choice. We can use that past circumstance, situation, experience to empower us or to disempower us. Now, it's not easy to do that. I don't want to make light of that, right? I don't want to make light of anyone's traumatic experience or situation because they're very challenging. But at the end of the day, to what some of the work that you do is reminding people that we still have a choice. So what could someone like her do? Maybe she sets up a group or joins an organization that to help women that have been through the same situation that she has, right? Something like that. So those are some of the thoughts that came to mind. And so, Rich, my follow-up question is, when you're sitting down with individuals, let's just keep it with the context of people or young kids that are in hard-hit neighborhoods, what are some of the questions that you're asking them to kind of allow them to see that they do actually have more choice than they believe they have?
So some of the questions, I would say the main question I ask is, what's your story? Mm. You know, the first thing that I want to approach with is listening. Let them know that someone hears you. You right. know, someone is willing to listen to you regardless. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to, you know, what's going on in your life from your perspective right now, because I can only come in and see things one way. You know, right. you have to tell me what it is, what is actual reality. And then I follow that up with, how do you feel right now?
Right.
You know, because then we get an emotional temperature check. And then, do you like it? Hmm. So those are the three big questions that I ask when we go through a lot of these process, because once I find out what their story is, how they feel about their story, and if they like it or not, you know, because we have to, we, you know, a lot of average people assume that everybody wants to be the hero, you know? And that's something that comes from a complex of how we're taught growing up or from movies that we might watch. But villains actually do exist. And that's not to say that, you know, we want people to be villains, but there's a certain thing that happens in our brains. It's called brain plasticity, where things are created when it comes to neurons firing off, your synapses firing off, and those new memories and old memories that are created through the same thing, like you said, the traumatic context or the non-traumatic context, anything that they're involved with, their environment, social standing, parental, you know, educational, all of that adds and molds into the person. And so if you ever watch like serial killer documentaries, a lot of the psychologists that are on those teams talk about things like this, because that develops into that person's right or wrong. And to them, they're not wrong. They're right. So we can't put that imposition of judging from how we feel on our perspective. And so it's important to ask them, if do you like where you're at right now? Do you like what you're doing right now? And, you know, carefully monitor from there so that you don't impede or impose on what they have going on.
Right. No, I love that. And it reminds me of a situation where a couple of years ago, my mother and I had a had an investment property, and things started off pretty well. We had rented it out to this young a young girl, and her boyfriend moved in. And that's when things got pretty interesting. I remember one time we went in Jamaica, and we got a domestic disturbance call. So there was a lot of arguing and fighting. And then, long story short, we wanted to repossess the property. And so when I came to do the inspection and all this stuff, I just remember Rich, this young guy, he was younger than me. I was right now I'm 39. At the time, I was probably about 34, 33 years old. I show up to the unit, and I show up to the door. He's a little bit taller than me, and I see him trying to size me up, flexing. Mind you, I've never seen this guy day in my life before. And I'm just like, in this moment, I'm like, this is some like male machismo stuff going on right here, right? I'm old enough and wise enough to kind of see what's happened, even though we haven't even exchanged words. And I just remember having to kind of coach myself and be like, hey, this is a business transaction for me, and not realizing where he thinks he is mentally, right? And so I remember at the end of it, we come to find out that he has a pretty low self-esteem or extremely self-conscious. What he did to my realtor, he actually threatened to kill my realtor because he thought his girlfriend was, you know, cheating on him or stepping out. So every time my boy, who was my realtor, would come to collect the checks, he would like write him very aggressive text messages. And at the end of the transaction, when I repossessed the keys, I don't know what made me say this or do this, Rich, but I looked him in the eyes and I was just like, oh, you good? So like you said, how you feel? You good? He's like, oh man, you know, family's everything to me, man. I mean, like family's like, you know, me and my girl, we're going through some problems right now, this and that. And I was like, is there anything I could do for you right now in this moment to ease whatever you're feeling? And he's like, ah, well, you know what? Actually, can you delete my girl's number from your phone? I was like, oh, that's it? Say less. I give him my phone. I make him delete it from my phone so he knows it's actually gone. But it was just interesting to me to see that that was a part of the reason why he was feeling that way. Now, to give you further context, he's a young man at about 25 at the time, living in a studio apartment with his girl with two children, right? So I have to understand how he's probably viewing himself when he sees someone like me, right? And the word that comes to mind when I'm hearing you talk about how you deal with young kids and just people in general is empathy, right? Trying to understand how someone is seeing the world from their space, right? We all have those rose colored, you know, lenses, as they say. So that really resonated with me, your perspective right there.
Thank you. And, you know, even as much as, you know, it's crazy because as much as empathy that it may seem as I have, I also don't have enough empathy that I should, because and part of understanding that is knowing that, because we live in a logic driven world where people are mostly emotional. And so dive into psychology, you know, a lot of things are presented to people like myself as facts or scientific, or it can be proven through this bearing process. You're not different than the other person. But the emotional aspect is what makes those things different, which is what science can't prove, how somebody can heal themselves, how somebody can do this, how somebody can do that. And that's where it comes from, the unknown. And that's a realm that I actively struggle with as well. I would be, you know, doing life a disservice if I didn't, you know, mention that as well, because I'm also not perfect, but I'm more logical driven. That's not to say I don't have emotions, but I'm not emotional.
Right. No, man, I've never heard anyone put it the way you just did. I love the way that you just articulated that. So going back to that scenario, you asking that young man those three questions. How do you feel? Do you like it? What's the next step after that? How do you help someone, you know, progress out of their current mindset or mind state?
So mindset is all about just what you're doing in the moment, what you're focused on. You know, mindset, if you really go to the basic definition, you know, discipline is mindset. And so I understand that everybody has to go to a core of discipline. So I ask, what are they disciplined in? You know, what's your activities? What's your hobbies? What do you do on a day-to-day basis? What do you like to do? You know, stuff like that. And once you start figuring out people's patterns, you can honestly place it into the four categories of mindset. And so the four categories of mindset are physical mindset, emotional mindset, mental mindset, and financial mindset. So once you understand all four of those, you get a consensus of what that person is dealing with or going through in their life or business. It doesn't matter. They're both interchangeable. But, you know, I put them on a 30-day mindset challenge, 30-day mindset program that I've created. And pretty much we treat it, you know, I was on deployment one day, and it was my last deployment before getting out. And, you know, again, I might be in a different environment now, and I'm getting accolades in there. We won company top shot. I was the top gunner for the tank. You know, we went over there. I have all these awards inside, but in my head, I'm like, man, I'm kind of scared because I have to go back out into the real world. And then me going back out to the real world, I don't know anything else. I went into a combat MOS where I blew stuff up for a living. I shot machine guns. You know, that was my life because I wanted to be that machismo guy back then. I was still in that frame of mind. You know, I might have changed my decision making, but I didn't change my actual personality yet. And so I joined based off of the version of myself I was. And so I understood at that point, which is where another shift happened, that I had to change what I know, which ultimately changed how I operate. And so I tried to read books on deployment. You know, when we went over there, I chose it as a time, 7.5 months of doing nothing, you know, just doing posts 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, 110 degree weather with 40 pounds of gear on, you know what I'm saying? And so it was desert. I had nothing else to do over there. And so on my free time, I went to read books. And that's when I found that distractions aren't even part of the issue, you know, and I know that on a deeper sense now, because most people say, oh, I'm distracted by my phone or life or this or that. And the biggest distraction comes from your actual mind wanting to do something or not wanting to, because even though I had nothing else to do, I couldn't read the books. And so it was a challenge for me. And I'm like, man, how can I not read these books right now? And it's, you know, I think I want it, but I didn't have a discipline for it. And so I started a tally mark system. My friend was joking. He was like, man, we're in jail, this and that, like, you know, whatever, blah, blah. He was like scratching tally marks onto the wall. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to do that. And I'm a competitive gaming kind of person. And so I started making my own tally marks, and I would pair it with every night before midnight. I had to make a tally mark on the wall to read a certain amount of that book. And if I didn't do that tally mark and, you know, read the book and let them know something that I read, then I would have to start my tally marks over. So in fear of missing out on starting something over, especially once I got to like week 2, week 3, you know, I did read the book, and eventually I finished my first book, which led to me reading like 4 to 5 books a month. Ultimately, by the time I left that deployment, I read 42 books. And wow, that's where I read The Alchemist, you know, Think and Grow Rich, the yeah, power of it, you know, how to influence people and friends and all of that stuff, yeah, you know, all of The Power of Habit, Charles E. Duhigg. And that's where I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So once I got out, you know, everybody went to go buy cars. Everybody went to go, you know, do whatever, meet their family, meet their girlfriends. I wasn't family oriented. And so I saved that money and I thought about what I would do next once I actually get out of the military, which is how I got into my first business. You know, I made that business with these kids that I used to play this game with. They were underage at the time. And, you know, they were smart, though. They didn't have anybody to leverage them or use, you know, their smartness because they're underage. They're playing a game and they're just talking. You know, you meet all type of people when you play a certain amount of games. So the game I was playing is League of Legends. I don't know if you know it.
Familiar.
And so with League of Legends, you know, you meet all type of random people. So we're in this group chat just chilling and they're like, man, we want to make this website, blah, blah, blah. I'm not really listening to them like that at first because they're saying it in between, like, just call outs and whatnot. But then it started making sense. And they were like, yeah, we could build it like this. And we could charge people based off of this and whatnot. And so the books that I had read, you know, here comes applying actual knowledge to execution. You know, I said, what if I gave you the money? And they laughed because literally they said, well, do you know how much money it would cost for that? And I was like, well, think about it. You know, what would you think it would cost for you to do this or that or whatever, blah, blah. They came out to a number like 18,000 something, whatever. I said, cool, I'll give you 20. And so I left the Marine Corps with about 25. And so that was all my money pretty much. But I said, hey, you know, in one of the books that I had read, and I don't even remember which one, but something in my head resonated, angel investing. And I said, okay, cool. Hey, if I give you this money, I just want this percent. I just want to take this percent. This is what I want to do. This is what, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so their parents got involved because they were underage. You know, we did official attorney contract type stuff, whatever. And so their attorney was a lot better than my attorney, you know, or my attorney just wanted to get paid. But theirs, you know, I guess their parents connected them. So I don't know how, but they made a deal for 10 years. And don't get me wrong, it's not a bad deal because I still definitely won and, you know, winning. But pretty much the contract expires in 2026. So this is 2016, 2026. And I would get a certain percentage of this company until then every month. And so, you know, that everything went. They made the website. Fast forward to now, it didn't start becoming profitable until maybe about 2 years later, like 2018, end of 2018, where I got my first residual $5,000 check.
Wow.
And I said, huh? You know, what just happened? And yeah, so seeing how that orchestrated life and seeing how those things went, I said, okay, now I have to create something that I own 100% of and still do the same thing where I'm no longer part of it like that. So that's where I met, you know, my friend Dan, the videographer that you saw at the PodFest. And I, you know, he had a camera and I said, hey, bro, I said, let's start a production company, you know? And that's where we went. And eventually later, you know, we scaled to 54 people now. You know, I put the camera down about 3 years ago and I started doing coaching full time, started really pursuing that route. And, you know, I learned to take a percent and play the middleman role from the contractors and employees that I hired and, you know, multi six figure company later from there.
Wow. That's crazy. And I kind of, I'm also laughing at the fact you just kind of like glossed over. Yeah. And then multi six figure company from there. I'm just like, man, get it though. Man, what a phenomenal story. I think there's so much to gather from that story. I mean, first of all, having the confidence and the belief to invest in, could I call them strangers, so to speak, right? To do that, I think takes a certain kind of individual. And I guess I would like to ask, how does one qualify their gut versus that those that data portion we're talking about, the facts and figures. Because you obviously heard these kids speak. They sounded intelligent. They sounded like they knew what they were talking about. But what was that thing that made you say, I gotta make this investment? I know you mentioned there was a book you drew something from that helped you to make that decision. But how does, for everyone else that's out there that's coming across an opportunity, how do they know this is a good bet?
So the truth is, you never know, because I've made also bad bets even after that. I've made very bad bets even after that, but I don't let that deter me. You know, I choose to wear my heart on the sleeve, because everybody that I interact with, I choose to meet them at 100%. Only that person can take me from 100% and, you know, devalue the amount of percentage that I'm willing to be open to them. And so, you know, and somebody determining what's right, you know, I always tell my people, hire for personality, train for skill. So even if it's not somebody that, you know, is the best at what they do, or the best, or doesn't have everything lined up or whatever, a lot of the people that have made, you know, my company be great, because it can't be great without them, you know, they weren't even interested in production. You know, one of my main people, we took him out of Apple. He was working a 9-to-5 and he's like, man, I hate it here. And he did a side swimwear brand on the side. And he was like, man, you know, he paid us a certain amount a month. And that's back then. I said, hey, if you come work for me, I'll take you out of that. Instead of you paying me, use that money. Because it was about $2,000 a month. I was like, you know, buy a camera and I'll teach you how to use that camera. And in turn, you know, be part of my company. And so, you know, before we got to 54 people, it was like a solid 5 or 6 of us that I had handpicked, recruited, and they weren't interested. They didn't have cameras before I did that. You know, they just had really good personalities. And from there, they learned to love the camera and they learned to branch out into their respective fields.
Right. I love the fact that you say hire on personality and then train for skill. I think that's such a conventional, no, I shouldn't say conventional. That to me makes the most sense now in hindsight, looking back. And it's so funny. I saw something on LinkedIn where they're now, I don't know if it's in certain states or what have you, they're going to start removing college degree certifications or requirements for entry level jobs. And I was just like, yeah, about time. Why are you asking people for experience when it's an entry level position? And I think that's going to open up a lot of doors too, because for most professions, for most careers, you know, going to college, university is not necessarily needed or mandatory. Yes, there are quite a few that it is very helpful, but for most, I would say you could probably learn that on the job, right? But no, man, that's an amazing story. I'm curious to know, because, you know, you help people, you're a business coach. So let's kind of bring it back to the Black community, right? When you look at Black businesses, Black entrepreneurs, Black solopreneurs, what is the number one thing, based on your experience, your POV, that's plaguing Black businesses, period?
Mindset.
Hmm.
Yeah, you know, it goes back to an old movie. Are you familiar with the movie Matilda?
Yeah.
You know, Mrs., I forget what her name is, but she used to bully her. You know, I'm big, you're small. I'm tall, you're short. I'm right, you're wrong, and there's nothing you can do about it. You know, that's the mentality a lot of our people have, is if they have leverage over something, you know, they become branded in a different nature. But the mindset of the programming that we've been, you know, inducted into, you know, a lot of people say, oh, crab in a barrel mentality. But there's actually documentary and research that crabs in a barrel don't actually pull each other down.
Interesting. You know,
somebody made that up. That's not an actuality. They don't pull each other down. It's when perception happens in a different type of way, or they're just exploring, that they pull themselves out of it, but nobody's pulling them down. It's just a connection, you know. Mm-hmm. And so them being connected all together, they still want to get out. People want to get out, and somebody's trying to go with them. until they realize the grass isn't greener on the other side. But, you know, in saying all of that, what our community has to realize and has to understand is that if we actually work together on certain things and feed each other knowledge on certain things, and especially the categories where we're not that prevalent. And, you know, me learning psychology, you know, I could count on one hand how many mindset coaches that I know, and none of them are Black right now, you know, in my industry, and that I've met at least. And so even in understanding that, you know, people might dive into the topic of mindset because it's necessary in business, but are they actually mindset coaches? You know, I'm not as focused on the finances as a regular business coach is. I'm more so focused on the structure, the system that we create. And so that's why I want our dollar to circulate within the community. I want us to be able to build those systems. But the educational system, the way it works is, you know, we've gone through grades. And so look at the grade system as just one example, one major example. You have K through 12. You know, you have them in blocks, about 4, 4, and 4. So you have your first through fourth, and then you have your 4th through 8th, and then you have your 9th through 12th. And then after that, they kind of leave you to do, you know, random other stuff, but they still hit you over the head because look at what college prices are, you know, for information that isn't that big or granulated, unless you're going into a field like doctors or nurse or, you know, surgeon, something like that. But I say all of that to say, you know, these are years of programming. These are 12 years, literally, at minimum, because some people go to college or don't go to college. Right. And so we approach somebody that's new into business, especially in the Black community, and expect them to be fully fulfilled or programmed on level one, you know, year one, year two, year three, year four. You know, we don't give ourselves enough time to fail in business or grow in business as we did to programming ourselves in school. And that's what entrepreneurship is. Entrepreneurship becomes a new version of schooling because you have to teach yourself how to operate in a different kind of way. And so if we can't even dedicate the same amount of time to what we're doing, failure or reward, you know, we'll never get to where we want to be. And that's part of a growth mindset or fixed mindset, which was, you know, coined by Carol Dweck. And so Carol Dweck is somebody who looked at the picture this way. But even the 34th president, you have Eisenhower. A lot of people don't even know this or even the history of the presidents. But Eisenhower got awards for being an academic mindset person. He got, I think, a Nobel Award for presenting ethics to how America was run on a base of principle. And Eisenhower Matrix was one of the biggest things that he created.
Wow. So, so many things that you just shared there. Mind blowing, really. One of the things I was thinking of, because you talking about the emphasis on mindset, another book that came to mind was James Clear,
Atomic Habits.
Phenomenal book. If you guys haven't read it, please do. So when you're sitting down with entrepreneurs, Black entrepreneurs, is there a difference when you're sitting between, let's say, a Black entrepreneur, let's say same stage, same money, relatively from a financial standpoint, but do you notice a difference from a mindset perspective between a Black entrepreneur and, let's just say, a non-Black entrepreneur?
Yes. And, you know, the answer that I'm going to give you is going to actually shock you.
Really? I'm interested. Let's go.
So the only difference is the Black entrepreneur knows they're Black.
Elaborate, please.
So a white entrepreneur, you know, even if they grew up in the same environment where the circumstances is the same financially, emotionally, mentally, physically, all of that stuff, they know they're not Black. And a Black entrepreneur automatically comes into a situation where, hey, I'm Black and I'm in business. And they correlate those two as if in this day and age that exists, and it actually doesn't.
I'm digesting that. So when you say it actually doesn't, what do you mean by that?
So for the average person, you know, they say for the Black household in America, the average median is anywhere from $38,000 to $42,000 a year.
Right.
So, you know, if I have a conversation with somebody like that and I say, yeah, you know, on a low month, I might do 50K a month, they wouldn't understand that because there's a big disparity of difference. And it, then that's where the ants, if we're talking James Clear, come into those automatic negative thoughts. They come in and, oh, you think you're better than us. Oh, you think you're too good. Oh, you're bougie. Oh, you this. Oh, you that. And we have so many divisions of light skin, dark skin, you know, him versus her or whatever, ratchet, you know, this and that. And that all stems from being black, you know, or representation of blackness. And so when you go to other communities, Asian, Latino, white, they aren't joking on their people the same way.
Valid point. Valid point. I get it. I get it. I get it. I get it. You know, slightly similar to what you're saying, I think, you know, not to kind of, you know, nitpick on our community, because all communities have their spoils, if you will. A thought that came across my mind the other day is, I think in our community, we put so much emphasis on the celebrity, the entertainer, whether they be an athlete or an actual entertainer, actor, comedian, so on and so forth. And I don't, and I love my entertainers, as many of us do. The challenge I see with that, though, sometimes is we ask them to be leaders in spaces they're uneducated about. And we base a lot of our decisions off of that. When I do feel that what someone of their ilk should do with a platform of their size is bringing people like you, who is an expert on mindset, into the space and just extending the platform because they have the reach, but you have the knowledge because you live, breathe, sleep, eat this stuff, right? But yes, fascinating point. And I'm now also thinking about when you said, because they're black, they're the only ones that like use that and it has a negative connotation to them. I was thinking about myself when I got my first corporate job on Wall Street. And I remember this, they brought me into this room because, you know, quite frankly, I hadn't made a sale yet. And, you know, a sale on the low end here is like 12 grand. Sale on the high end is like 50 to 100,000. And this is all over the phone. We're talking international markets. And I was working my butt off, but for some reason just couldn't close. And I remember they brought me in this room and it's like, Corey, man, you're working hard. You're doing all the right things. I think, and the market that I was involved in involved me calling amongst what we would call good old boys. So think Texas, Louisiana, so on and so forth. And they said, Corey, we think you sound maybe too urban for them, right? And in that moment, I was about 24 years old at the time. That was the first time in my professional life that I realized I was different. Like, obviously, I knew I was different, but that was like the moment where I'm like, oh, there's a real, that's, and that came into my mind. I never really thought that before. I don't know if you understand what I mean by that.
Yep.
And it kind of, I would say in that moment, it became like a detriment to me because now I was always thinking about that. You know, I get into a room and I'd be like, oh, I'm the only one that looks like me in this room. And I would emphasize on that in past roles and stuff that I've done before. And get it, there are times where that comes into play in a negative fashion, but sometimes we could be our own worst enemy. And I remember speaking with someone that I have a lot of respect for, and he's like, yeah, Corey, you know, that is the case for myself as well. I get into a room, I'm usually the only one that looks like me, but what I like to say to myself is, and use the word perspective early on in this conversation, he said, I'm the only me in this room. And I held on to that little gem he gave me. So when I go into a room now, I'm like, I'm the only me in this room, period. Regardless of color, ethnicity, background.
There's a mental thing that a quote that I kind of put out all the time. And it speaks directly to my audience is intellect has no dress code.
Ooh.
And so You know, I move around like that. When people see me at PodFest, I'm going to wear my hat. I'm going to wear my shades. I'm going to wear my bucket. I'm going to wear all of that, because once you have a conversation with me, you understand, oh, you know, there's a difference. You know, this isn't a regular conversation. And I want the people that look like me to understand that, because when I wear my suits and stuff, myself back then, I would never have that conversation with you. And so even with the people that I talk to now, I might show up to a corporate place and be super dressed down. That's not all the time, but I also, you know, it works on both sides of the fence. Our people need to see that, you know, just like you said, that celebrity kind of figure, that influencer kind of figure, I want to still be able to give that look, but also be able to give that knowledge, because a look is just a look at the end of the day. If I walk into a corporate office, which is why if you, you know, when you come visit the office in Hollywood, you'll see it's literally all lawyers. You know, I'm the only creative person in that building. And I told, you know, the landlord, I said, I want the first room. I said, I want the first set of rooms. And I got all of them. You know what I'm saying? And so when people walk in that building, I'm the first thing that they see. The most urban thing in the building that they see. The rest is lawyers and, you know, corporate stuff, whatever, admins, everything. Literally, I'm the only one that comes in dressed the way that I do. And me being around them, I've been there for going on 5 years now. And at first they used to, you know, I would see the looks and the judgment, but now they understand, especially the ones that are left, you know, left before me, or the ones that would be complaining about prices. They're like, yo, this kid is still here. This kid is still doing this. And I don't even know what he does now. Some of them talk to me. And I actually have a lawyer that is about to get the coaching program now. Two lawyers that are about to get the coaching program now. And so, you know, even with that, that shows power to proximity. You know, put yourself in those positions, but, you know, don't change who you are just based off of what society calls right or wrong.
Right. I love that. And you know what? You saying all that, that took me a long time to get there. And if I'm being super honest and transparent, I just got there recently, to be honest with you.
But you got there.
But I got there. I got there. And I think that's you know, especially being in corporate, I see a lot of us, I'm going to use a loose term, code switch. Not granted, there's code switching with a lot of different things. You know, the way you talk to your friends, you might not talk to your mom, so on and so forth. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking like a complete.
You don't know who that person is.
What? Yeah. And I was like, what? Like, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, no, that's got to stop. Right. I get what you're doing. I know, I understand why you're doing it. But I remember one person said to me, they hired you for you. And I love the point. I just wrote down what you said. Intellect has no dress code. And I take that beyond just physical dress. I take that in terms of how someone just looks physically. Like, you think about someone who has dreads, right? You might not associate with him being a doctor, right? So, man, that was very powerful.
So I want to ask another question real quick, you know, just to also put it in size perspective. The NFL is owned by who?
Ooh, white folks.
Okay. And for their halftime shows, what's the most ethnic background they choose?
Black folks.
Now, why is that?
I'm going to say that black folks are synonymous with entertainment.
Synonymous with entertainment, but because they also don't want to see the same thing. And so when it comes to business, people will do what's more lucrative for them, regardless of what race it is. That's why people that own the NBA, own the NFL, own a lot of these bigger companies, even somebody now, you know, BET was sold to a white guy, you know. And so these things, they understand lucrativeness. These people speak figures. They speak actual, you know, dollar increments. And so as long as it's not jarring, you know, you still can't be ratchet. You can be urban, but you can't be ratchet. And
there's levels
within that. There's understanding that people will do business with you as long as you're you. If you build a brand around you, you won.
Absolutely. And you're right to that. There's levels to that. 100%. Man, Rich, there's been so many gems shared here today. So as we kind of come to a close, before I even ask you some really quick, fun, kind of rapid fire questions, If there was one takeaway you would want my listeners, my audience to leave with from this conversation, one takeaway, what would that be?
Vulnerability.
Please elaborate.
So, you know, being vulnerable takes courage and, you know, staying the same. You know, when I say vulnerability, I'm talking about vulnerable to change, you know, because yes, you can stay the same, but there's two different type of pains. There's pains in changing and there's pain in staying the same. And I promise you, staying the same person that you are is going to hurt a lot more. And that's not to say that you're not fine the way you are now. You know, this applies to everybody everywhere, but there is growth that happens when, that's why we called our elders wise. That's why, you know, even in the Bible, these are the wise old men, because right. It takes for you getting older, but you don't, it doesn't matter an age point if you don't grow along the way, if you don't learn these experiences around the way as a coach, as a CEO, as a, you know, successful business. The only thing between successful businesses and unsuccessful businesses is the experiences that they go through and the leverage that they use that to grow their company for a better thing. Because again, I take losses. Last year I took like a $52,000 loss. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And that's, hey, listen, it hurt. It hurt. But in it hurting, a lesson was derived and something else was created, you know, but then you have to take the wins that came with it. I took a chance. Last year was my first time podcasting. We had a 6-figure podcast in our first year. And so, you know, being able to do that, being able to understand vulnerability, you know, I only hit that because I went to experts and I said, hey, man, I don't know. I'm already at a point in my life where I do have a certain standard and I don't necessarily need podcasting or anything like that, but being able to humble myself to the point or fill myself with humility, I don't like the word humble, and go to these people and say, can you help me? I want to learn. And then actually learn, not learn from the perspective of who I was, but learn from the perspective of the person I wanted to be.
Wow. Well, Rich, you caught my attention. You said something crazy that I was not expecting, sir.
Which one?
And then you said you made a 6-figure podcast in 1 year.
Yeah.
What was the, I don't need you to share all your details, but if you could give myself and my listeners 2 to 3 things you did to put you in position to make 6 figures from your podcast, what were those things?
Create a system. A lot of people, you know, do things with intention, but they don't do things with a system of intention. And there's a difference, believe it or not. You know, when you do things with attention, you'll get exactly what you want in that moment done. But then what happens, you know? And so when I say create a system, what are your call to actions? What do you want your people to do? Okay, cool. We make this episode. What happens after that? How are you monetizing that? Where are you? What are you doing? You know, how are people connecting with you after? What happens in the downtime? You know, treat it like a business. If your store is open, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, how are you competing with the stores that are open that Tuesday, Thursday, and even for the weekend? So what happens on those downtime? What happens after the intention is occurred? So, you know, and building those systems was how I led people to booking things with me afterwards, you know, people inquiring for information afterwards, setting up sponsorships. We have a few sponsorships, you know, doing all of those things and attracting these brands to us.
Right. I love it. Creating a system. And actually, I have one more question. I'm really interested to know, from your experience on the battlefield, what was your most memorable experience while being at war? And what did you learn from that experience?
Our most memorable experience was we had fun. It sucked, but we had fun. You know, when I think back to deployment, I think of laughs. I think of smiling. As much, you know, uptight as everybody was, you know, as serious as we were unserious because, you know, we had fear. You know, it's the people that don't have fear that don't make it usually because they're not looking at it. Fear is essential to survival.
Right.
If you're scared, that means that you're scared to lose.
Right.
If you're scared to lose, that means you're willing to protect something. It's the people that go into thing and, oh, I got this. You know, I'm there. That life comes right past them And that usually puts you in a worse off situation.
And do you have like a hack for dealing with fear? Because a lot of us deal with fears in different spaces. Maybe it's fear of standing out at work and giving presentations, right? Maybe it's a fear of approaching someone that you really like, or it's a fear of swimming or whatever the situation. Do you have like a hack that you use to overcome those fearful moments?
Absolutely. Build a team. And so in building a team, life wasn't meant to be lived alone. This is why even at the very essential of our core, man needs a woman, woman needs a man. You know, we all need a partner. Somebody has to have our back. Our six is what we call it in the military. So if I'm scared of something and you're not, that's how we become that yin and yang, that perfect pair. We had those people like, I'm ready to go out there and kill everybody and do this and that. And then you had the people that were scared that watched that person when they did go out there without looking. They were the ones that looked, you know, so you have to have your pick and choose in life and in business the same way. You have the ones that are going to be the risk takers, but the risk takers need to be paired with the organizers. And so that's something else that I came up with is, you know, the animal personalities of business. And so you have your sea urchin, your shark, your whale, and your dolphin. Right. So the sea urchin is more analytical. The dolphin is more energetic. They're the life of the party. The shark is aggressive. They're going to go straight for the money. And then a whale, they don't really care about the money, but they're community oriented. And so understanding and having all of these in your group to be able to speak to all peoples and all business on your podcast and business and whatever. That's how I have four companies that are all over six figures.
Amazing. Rich, man, this has been a beautiful conversation. So really quick, rapid fire questions. If you could change one thing about the world, one thing, what would it be?
Mindset.
On brand. Love it. I love it. And what's your animal personality? Which one are you?
Sea urchin.
Sea urchin. Gotcha.
I love information.
I love it. And number three, what is one quote or mantra that you're currently living by?
One quote or mantra that I'm living by. Wow. Treat others how you want to be treated. That's the first thing that popped in my head.
Love it. I love it. So, Rich, for all my listeners, for my audience that would like to get in touch with you, maybe hire you as a coach, what have you, be a guest on your podcast, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
So you can tap in on, you know, attractivemindset.com, or you can find me on Instagram at Real Moneybag Rich, and that's all platforms. Or you can visit our podcast on our YouTube channel, Attractive Mindset. And, you know, just tap in with us, you know, before you join any coaching thing. And I say this especially for myself or others, you know, make sure you know who you're doing business with first. You know, get to know me first. Don't just like what I say and then join my personality, because even though I say what I say, I'm also not for everybody. And so I'll turn you down, even if you have the funds, you know. So we have to be in perfect partnership before. I'm not looking for clients. I'm looking for partnerships.
I love it. This man has said all the right things today. I don't know if he's running for office in 2024, but damn, he could. Guys, as many of you know, I like to end each episode by saying this in 2024. Sometimes you don't need to learn or see something new. Sometimes you just have to hear or see that somebody else is going through it as well, right? The power of relatability. So with that being said, guys, myself and Rich are out. Peace and love. Until the next time.